Jersey TV.
No, not exactly feeling that great, but the show must go on. I mean, when do you ever feel really great? You just have to keep plugging away. Many, many times, you have to do things that you don't want to do. It reminds me of a vacation. So people say, we're going to go on vacation and relax. It's like, what? Maybe as a kid, vacations were relaxing. But a vacation where you have to get on a map, plan the trip, or book a flight, book the hotel, figure out how you're going to get from the airport to the hotel, figure out your agenda, be on your feet all the time. Boy, I don't know about you, but that's not a vacation to me. A vacation to me is sitting on the sofa with my computer on my lap watching cute dog videos. That's relaxing. I've never been on a relaxing vacation. I'm not saying I haven't been on vacations where there have been good experiences. A vacation can be a good experience. I say, let's have an experience. Okay, I can go with that. Like Paul spending a day and a night in a swamp. That was an experience. Paul being beaten by the ornery people in Philippi. That was an experience. Say, Paul, you want to go to Philippi and have an experience? Yeah, but don't say we're going to go to Philippi and relax. Okay, it's a misnomer of the most vulgar proportions. Speaking of misnomers of the most vulgar proportions, I found myself, you know, staying up late on New Year's. What did you do on New Year's Eve? Well, there was a time when I was just determined that I was going to be in bed at midnight. Like, I'm just out of sheer rebelliousness, just because I'm a contrarian. Like, I don't care if it comes in or out. No, that's not what she said. So, but this year, I do believe this is the last year we will experience on this earth. But of course, it's a false line, this January 1st thing. We don't know where the real line is for sure. But let's just say, you know, it's the line for all practical purposes. I think this will be the last year, the last time we'll have to see a new year come in, which is great. But anyway, I found myself committed to going over to a friend's house on New Year's Eve, and I was not promised that it was going to be a relaxing time. That's good. I was promised it was going to be an experience. So that's good. And the experience included, you know, staying up till God knows when. So once you surrender yourself to a thing, I mean, I like going to bed on time. I'm a big bedtime guy. Just love bedtime. One of my favorite times of day. But once in a while, you just have to do things for other people. It's called selflessness. And as long as you have to do it, and as long as you find yourself in the situation, you might as well go for it. So that's what happened to me. I found myself with a bunch of Peruvians, a pride of Peruvians. And they were playing Spanish songs, Latin songs. I guess you could call them Latin songs. I don't know. Lovely people. I find that Latin people in general are lovely, but specifically the Peruvians are. I'm going to get to a scriptural topic. What do you see? It's going to be fascinating. It's going to fascinate you. So they were playing some music, and somebody had an instrument called the cajon. It was called a cajon, and it's a drum. It's a percussion instrument. It's a large box, hollowed out box, and the percussionist sits on it, and then bangs out a beat, and depending on which part of the cajon you strike, you can either get a boom, a deep like bass sound, boom, or a snarish type percussion sound. Think, boom, think. Oh, I'd only messed with one time before, but the challenge came. Can the gringo, I was the only gringo at this party, it's probably about 12 people, can the gringo hang with the Latinos? I guess there was a rumor going around that I had in sometime in my past played percussion. So, as I said, once I know I'm in a situation, I am going to go for it. I'm going to make the most of it. And so at 3 a.m., when ordinarily I would be in REM sleep, rapid eye movement, my eyes go, I was jamming. And, well, let's just say, score one for the Gringos. Here's two little bits of songs that I played. One was a song I'd never heard before. It was in Spanish. Never heard it before. But once you find the groove, you see. Another song is Santana. You will recognize it. So here's yours truly on New Year's Eve, 3 a.m., hanging with the Latinos. Okay, yeah, that was fun. I got to admit, I was happy. The people were happy. The people there, they were amazed. They were cheering for me. It was a great experience. It just goes to show you that, you know, you have to throw yourself into some situations in this world. None of us are fond of beyond three, but there comes times, various times, when either for your family's sake or just for the sake of other people, just to not be so damn selfish for a switch. Do something for others. And the greatest gift I could give these people was to play the cajon for them. And so that's what I did, and it went fairly well. I quit while I was ahead, though. So, in chapter 4 of James, James is one of the lowest, spiritually lowest letters in the whole scriptures. You don't have to look far. If you go down to verse 4 of chapter 4, James is addressing adulterers and adulteresses. Are you not aware that friendship of this world is enmity with God? Now we have to take the scriptures literally if possible. Is it possible that James was writing to adulterers and adulteresses? Well, we're talking about Israelites here, so I would say yes. Very probable. And it's literal. Yeah, so that's the level we're working at here with James. So James is very primitive. So in the same chapter, chapter 4, I'm going to read for you a verse that you're all familiar with. But then I'm going to read for you a shocking verse from our Apostle Paul that just goes against this. I don't know if anybody's ever pointed this out to you. This is more entertaining than the world's most outspoken Bible scholar playing the cajon. More entertaining than that even. So here comes James, verse 13, chapter 4. Come now, you who are saying, today or tomorrow we will be going into this or that city and should be spending a year there, and we will be trafficking and getting gain. You are not versed in that which is the morrow's. In other words, you don't know anything about tomorrow. For what is your life? A vapor are you. James must have been one of the co-writers of Dust in the Wind, the Kansas song. A vapor are you, which is appearing briefly and thereupon disappearing. Instead of your saying, in other words, these people said, we're going to go to this town, we're going to go to this city, we're going to do that. James says, You say that instead of this. This is what you should say. If the Lord should ever be willing, and we shall be living, we also shall be doing this or that. So James takes it beyond whether I'm going to go to this city or that city. He says, you don't even know if you're going to be alive tomorrow. Martin said that you don't believe that. Yes, of course I believe it. We don't know what tomorrow holds. And when you're getting down to nitty-gritty prayer, the best prayer ends with, not my will, but thine be done. But James is obsessed about this. As he's dealing with people who are saying, we're going to go to this and that city. And since he's writing to adulterers and adulteresses, I guess these people are so into their agenda, their thing, that James is worried, and he's probably legitimately concerned that these people are going to suddenly begin to think that they're sovereigns. James is probably fighting the free will thing with the adulterers and adulteresses. I'm thinking, it's like, don't you know that you're not going anywhere unless God wills it? You're not even going to get out of bed unless God wills it. This is what is commonly referred to as, and I refer to it often as, the relative viewpoint. You're a vapor. You adulterers and adulteresses, all you are is vapor in the wind. You're appearing briefly and thereupon disappearing. Instead of you're saying, if the Lord should ever be willing and we shall be living, we also shall be doing this or that. I love how scripture uses this or that. That's good. And verse 16, yet now you are vaunting in your ostentations. What's the ostentation? Simply that they said, let's go to this town. Let's go here tomorrow. Let's go there the next day. What do you think? James, he won't have it. You are boasting in your ostentations. Vaunting, that's even worse than boasting, let me tell you. Vaunting in your ostentations. All such boasting, I knew we'd get around to using that word, is wicked. They're wicked. What boasting? Simply by saying they're going to go to this town tomorrow without adding if the Lord is willing. James says you are wicked and you're boasting and you're vaunting in your ostentations. I said, all I said was I'm going to Jericho in the morning. You don't even know if you're going to be alive in the morning, you prostitute, you adulterer. James is such fun. No, James would never have even gone to the New Year's party. No, James couldn't have played the cajon. If I even say what I was thinking of saying, James would accuse me of vaunting in my ostentation, and then he would come around, get around just calling me wicked. So now I want to read you Romans chapter 15. Listen to this and be entertained. And of course, I'm going to explain to you what's happening here because this seems a shock. Let's start with verse 21. But according as it is written, they who are not informed concerning him shall see, and they who have not heard shall understand. Wherefore, I was much hindered also in coming to you. Yet now, having by no means still place in these regions, sounds like he couldn't make the rent or something, or they kicked him out. I don't know. He puts it in a nice way. Having by no means still place in these regions, yet having for many years a longing to come to you, as ever I may be going into Spain. For I'm expecting while going through to gaze upon you and by you to be sent forward there if I should ever first be filled in part by you. Get this guy. He's a terrible writer. Terrible writer. I've said that many times. God chose a terrible writer. Logical is all get out, but a terrible, terrible writer. It's rare when the guy just makes a solid point. And that's why I thrill in 1 Thessalonians 4, the snatching away. He's so clear. Never been more clear in describing the snatching away. That's why it just frosts me when people say, I wonder what Paul means by that. You don't wonder what Paul means by that. That's the clearest the guy's ever been. This. If ever I may be going into Spain, for I'm expecting while going through to gaze upon you and by you to be sent forward there, if I should ever first be filled in part by you. That's what she said. Verse 25, yet now I'm going to Jerusalem, dispensing to the saints. I want to go to Spain. I'm expecting to go to Spain and see your face. But But now I'm going to Jerusalem, dispensing to the saints, for it delights Macedonia and Achaia to make some contribution to the poor of the saints who are in Jerusalem. For they are delighted, and they are their debtors. For if the nations participate in their spiritual things, they ought to minister to them in fleshly things also. When, then, performing this, when I do this, when I go to Jerusalem and dispense these contributions to the saints there, and sealing to them this fruit, I shall be coming away through you into Spain. What is missing here, ladies and gentlemen? What is missing here in the words of this ostentatious vaunter, this boasting adulterer here? This man who's vaunting in his ostentations, wicked man, a wicked man, according to James, who says, I'm going to be doing this tomorrow, and then after I'm done doing that, I'm going to be coming to you in Spain. Not one breath of, if the Lord is willing, I shall do this. If I'm even alive tomorrow, I shall do this. What's the difference here? Oh, I'm glad you asked. It's profound. It's the difference between the gospel of the circumcision and the gospel of the uncircumcision. Let me read to you Galatians. Let's go to chapter 2, verse 20. With Christ have I been crucified, yet I am living. But no longer I, but living in me is Christ. Now that which I am now living in the flesh, I am living in faith. It is of the Son of God who loves me and gives himself up for me. I am not repudiating the grace of God. This man has so wrapped his head around the new creation that the old humanity was crucified, that he's no longer competing with this old I. And we see this constantly with Christians who do not understand, have not come into the truth of the new humanity, the new creation. They're so afraid to use the word I. And James is the same way. James is a circumcision saint, obviously. And their spiritual understanding is so primitive. And it's always them versus God. We don't know what God's will is, so we're going to have to be careful. Paul says in another place, to live is Christ. To live is Christ. And here in Galatians 2:20, he's saying, with Christ I have been crucified, yet I am living no longer I, but living in me is Christ. So Paul assumes, now he assumes that living in him is Christ, and that even while he still uses the personal pronoun I, it's no longer the old I, it's the new I. And now the assumption is the glorious assumption, and God loves for us to make this assumption, is that Christ is in him, and he can't make a mistake. And so he doesn't have this dichotomy. He doesn't have this wrestling match between himself and the I, the old I. But see, the old I in Israel has not been crucified. They're still wrestling with that. They're still trying to prop up the old I. They were not crucified with Christ. James was not crucified with Christ. No, he was not. That's the truth for the body of Christ only. James is not of that company. There is no new humanity yet in the Israel message. And there won't even be it during the 1,000 years, because they're still Israelites. They still have preeminence even in the 1,000-year kingdom. And so because of that and that alone, we don't see this eradication of national distinctions or an eradication of the old I. But to Paul, the old I has been destroyed. But Paul has a problem. He has a problem. With Christ, I've been crucified, so the old I was destroyed, yet I am living. That's a weird problem. My old I was destroyed, but I'm still living. So what the heck? What do I do with that? Oh, it's no longer I, but living in me is Christ. That's the key. Living in me is Christ. Now that which I am now living in the flesh, I am living in faith that is of the Son of God. He is of faith, Paul, that is of the Son of God, that he takes it for granted that of course he's not going to wake up in the morning if he dies during the night. Of course he's not going to go to Spain if God doesn't want him to go to Spain. It's like, duh, of course he's not going to go to Jerusalem if the Lord does not will it. And yet, this guy is so confident in the new I, so confident of Christ in him. He's not trepidatious like the Jews are. And Christians, all Christians are like this. They're always worried that they're going to go against Christ and that they're going to displease Christ, and they're going to make a misstep and get out of God's will. And when they get out of God's will, no telling what's going to happen there. So they walk very, very, very carefully. Like Elmer Fudd, very carefully. Well, we don't want to screw up God's will for our life. We could make a big mistake. The old eye is very, very much alive here. Yeah, for James it is, but for us it's not. And so I love this. Paul is not doing what James said. Yet, of course, it's taken for granted. It's assumed that none of these things are going to happen unless God wills it. And so Paul is just inhabiting the new eye. He's inhabiting it. He lives it. He breathes it. I wish I had that verse reference to me. To live is Christ. To live is Christ. There it is. Everything he's doing is Christ. He doesn't need to add if the Lord should be willing. He could. He believes it. He believes it. But he's not so really primitive and uber scared like James is. You have to add that. What if you don't add, unless the Lord wills, then it's you versus Christ, and your will might trump God's will, you know. That's what it is. There's competing wills. Your will might trump God's will. You got to be careful. Don't come across as an arrogant person. When I say, I'm going to publish a book next month. Martin, you don't know if you're going to publish a book next month. I know. But I have faith that is of the Son of God. And I'm assuming that Christ's Spirit lives in me and that if he wants it done, it'll be done. I don't have to add that every time. I don't have to tiptoe through the tulips, walk on eggshells to worry about offending James, or nor do I have any fear that something I do is going to screw up Christ's designs for my life. So it's the glory of the new I. But the trick is it's the same freaking word. It's I, the letter I. It's the same pronoun. But what a difference with Paul using it and James using it. When Paul uses it, it's the new I. When James uses it, it's still the old I. And he has to prop it up with the 2x4s of make sure you add if the Lord is willing, if the Lord is willing. Because if the Lord's not willing, you won't do that. Really? So I always say to people, it's like, I know. But Martin, why do you say you're going to publish a book next month? You don't know, you see. We don't have to think like that anymore. We don't have to be trepidatious. We don't have to be afraid. We have confidence that is of the faith of the Son of God.